Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Wow, it's October 1st already. Adam Lepp here with a show that we call A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor. Dr. Ron Feynman joins me from Florida to talk about politics and Supreme Court justices and other things going on in the great world around us. Something tells me, Ron, we're going to have enough material for about six shows today, so either you and I must talk fast, or we're going to have to pick and choose, rock, paper, scissors, which topic we're going to talk about. First, how is October treating you so far?
Well, it's only been a few hours, so I woke up today, so I'm happy about that.
Yes,
but
every
thank
day
you for
wake
being
up
on the show again.
It's a victory.
What's
it's
that?
Glad to have you on for the 117th time, and we really appreciate
it. Not quite. About 75, I think it is. I have to count it up. But anyway, I was saying, though, that I thank you for having me on again. And indeed, this whole thing about 6 hours, it's true. We could go on and on and on if it was an all-day show. There's always enough to talk about. You're right.
And Dr. Feynman is nice enough to join me, and he's been on with Scott Spears, the interviewer to the stars, more than a few times. He has a blog called the ProgressiveProfessor.com, where he talks about politics and some things from a more left perspective. But he's not, I would say, he's not quite like Bernie Sanders. He's more like, of course, Hillary or Joe Biden or John F. Kennedy or Humphrey or any of those fine folks.
However, maybe Amy Klobuchar. I really like Amy Klobuchar right now.
Yes,
I'm getting
we,
more interested in her as a candidate. Yeah,
and we talked about on a previous show. She is quite easy on the eyes, which is not certainly the biggest qualifier to be in office, but certainly can be helpful as we are a society where image is important. And it's not just being good looking, it's how you present yourself. And I think she presents herself very well, and it's good to watch her. And it's obvious she has an IQ well in the three figures, unlike possibly some other people. However, before we progress with the show, I want to get out the candles, and there's a lot of candles here. They don't pay me enough at the station to buy this many candles, but I went to Walmart, found a sale, and I bought 94 candles on a peanut-flavored cake. Now, Ron, that could only mean one thing. As the official WWGH presidentologist, why don't you share with our listeners exactly who is celebrating number 94 today?
Jimmy Carter, the 39th president of the United States, hit 94 today. He's the second one to do it. George H.W. Bush reached it on June 12th. And I've published just today on Monday a blog entry. If you want me, I can read it if it's not too long. Is that all right?
Yeah, we'll cover that shortly. But what I want to do, you know, I love commercials and I love advertising. That's one of the most fun things you do in radio. Let's go ahead and set the clock back 42 years to the Democratic primary race.
1976,
yes. Yes, the bicentennial year, 200 great years of this wonderful country, and an ad for the Democratic primary from the peanut person himself. Stand by, let me get the intern to roll the tape, and we'll give a listen to it.
Jimmy Carter knows what it's like to work for a living. Until he became governor, he put in 12 hours a day in his shirt sleeves during harvest at his farm. Can you imagine any of the other candidates for president working in the hot August sun? That's why Jimmy Carter has a special understanding of the problems facing everyone who works for a living. America needs someone like this as president. Vote for Jimmy Carter in your Democratic primary.
Now, Ron, when I heard him talk about imagine any other presidential candidate working 12 hours in the hot August Georgia sun, which I can assure you is hotter than the sun here in the Buckeye State, I giggled, but I also appreciated this man, and he still builds houses in the age of 94, which is
yes, amazing,
incredible to say the least. And he's had some health setbacks. And he doesn't really care; he does it anyway. When you heard that, for 3 years.
Yeah,
when you heard that, Ron, about imagine any other candidate doing that, and Carter being a hard worker, you know, obviously a smart man, Georgia governor, I mean, well qualified when he entered office. I mean, he had a difficult presidency, as we all know. We're talking about Carter the man as the hard worker, even 42 years later. But what did you think? I mean, do you agree? Is that just in complete contrast to our current president and some of our other recent candidates?
Well, certainly very different than Donald Trump, who works very few hours and spends more time golfing than anything else. And he's broken the emoluments clause, and now there's a lawsuit that's going forward about the fact he's earning money on his properties, including in D.C. and elsewhere, every day. And that's illegal. It's not something that should be impeachable and removing from office, even forgetting everything else. But, yes, Jimmy Carter, actually, when you study the presidency, a lot of presidents have worked hard, yes. But, honestly, I would put him in a special category with one other person, which, interestingly, was a person who worked much too hard and actually, you could say, worked himself to death. James K. Polk, P-O-L-K, the 11th president, only lived 105 days after his presidency. He had a lot of ailments, stomach ailments, but they say always everything about him that he worked more hours than any other president. And I think Jimmy Carter, as far as hours of work, probably is next to him in that regard. But the difference is Polk died 105 days after, and Jimmy Carter is now 38 years after. So it's a total contrast in that respect.
And as we've talked about, Ron, Carter is arguably the best ex-president ever. I mean, he had a difficult presidency. I was not a big supporter of his policies, but I did respect him as a man. I mean, he is a down-to-earth guy with an amusing family. I mean, amusement is part of the office, and you know how much I like Billy Carter and his daughter Amy and Rosalind
yeah.
and his mother, Miss
Lillian. His mother, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's important, and compare it to the current presidential family, and I mean, I like Barron, I like Melania, but the older children and his ex-wives, this is a family show, so I'm not going to talk about it, but I can't say that I'm exactly enamored with them. So, you know, I do like Melania, yes. And I feel for Barron because he's not comfortable in his role, but it kind of comes with the territory. I mean, Amy Carter had her awkward moments, too, but she obviously did care about her country, and she was visible. I remember when she went to the Washington, D.C. public schools, and they put that on TV and had all the security and everything. So just Carter showing he's a down-to-earth guy. Some of the same things.
And the point is, Amy went to public schools in D.C. It didn't go to private schools. That's an important point to mention.
Some of the same things we saw with Obama, I think. But again, it's a different time. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. Yeah. And Mark Zuckerberg wasn't even born yet, for goodness sake. So no tweeting at 2 a.m. like a certain president. So things were different, but we do see parallels in many different administrations. Now, let's go ahead, Ron, and fast forward the clock to 1980. We had the Iran hostages still in captivity. We had inflation, high interest rates, lines at the gas station. Not really very good times as we entered the 1980s. I will say the music was very good.
And also the Mariel boat lift from Cuba was also a big negative.
You know, I think, you know, on a positive basis.
In Miami.
The music of the late 70s, early 80s was wonderful and probably arguably the best music ever. So that was good. You know, my Cincinnati Reds, they'd come off two recent World Series victories, and they were still a decent team, and Pete Rose still around, et cetera, but in terms of the health of the country from an economic standpoint, and the Iran hostage problem, it was a very difficult time, and of course that made the election an interesting one, as we had Ronald Reagan in the main election against President Carter, and Reagan did win by a rather substantial margin. So
we also had the best independent presidential candidate, John Anderson of Illinois, who I almost voted for.
Yeah, and of course,
he was really a good candidate, John Anderson.
Not surprisingly, the interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears, interviewed John Anderson. But of course, why wouldn't he? He is the one and only Scott. But that's okay. Dr. Feinman is still an important person, and it's my pleasure to talk to him on my show. So let's go ahead and give a listen to a Carter re-election commercial from 1980.
Each day, the world's most important information flows into the Oval Office. And when the Chief of State travels out into the world as our principal representative, he must carry at his fingertips a vast fund of ever-changing information about nations, relations, and people.
This will be the fourth Economic Summit Conference, and I approach it with optimism.
Whether at an economic summit or at the funeral of a Japanese prime minister, President Carter represents this nation with intelligence and dignity. He has built an enduring relationship with the People's Republic of China, and he has established working friendship with a range of world leaders. Like many Americans, they have come to respect the dedication, the humanity, and the good sense of President Jimmy Carter.
So, Ron, when you hear that commercial, I was thinking about the relations with China. And you probably heard Donald Trump saying he had a love affair with, or they fell in love, him and Kim Jong-un from Korea. And talking about foreign policy, now we're not sure if Donald Trump is going to be in his office for the total of 4 years, but so far he's there. So let's just assume that he does make it to the next reelection time frame. How do you think his reelection commercial will compare to what Carter said about foreign policy, which did show Carter in a very positive light?
Well, of course, if he's running, he's going to have kind of a positive light. He'll talk about his love affair, which is what he said this past few days, which stunned me, with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. A love affair? That sounds so strange that a president would say something like that, particularly when we have no evidence of any denuclearization going on. And it just makes him look really silly, because he talks about love affairs. He doesn't say he has a love affair with Putin, but he does, obviously. But he actually says with Kim Jong-un, he says he loves or really admires authoritarians, and yet he can't get along with Justin Trudeau of Canada, and can't get along with Theresa May of Britain, or Macron of France, or Merkel of Germany. And I think he disorients South Korea's leader because he's too much in a love affair with North Korea and Japan also with Abe. It's just amazing to me. But of course he's going to try to make himself look good. But to go to a rally and talk about that, that we have a love affair and the audience just sits there and doesn't react against it. I mean, especially since some of the people in the audience are probably anti-gay, and it almost sounds gay-like when you talk about two men loving each other. I mean, for the viewpoint of how people see it, it's just unbelievable. But this man is nothing too low he can go in what he says or does. It's disgrace.
So what did you think about Carter and his claims about excellent foreign policy? Now, he left out the big one, again, the hostage crisis. Of course, he wants
to focus. Well, that was still in process, don't forget. That
right.
was still in process.
He wants to focus on the positive.
Well, we did have the Camp David Accords between Egypt and Israel. We did have the Panama Canal Treaty. We did a promotion of human rights, the exact opposite of what Trump is doing on that. Also, the fact of the opening of direct relations with China after Nixon started to deal with China but did not give them diplomatic recognition. I think those are major things in foreign affairs. The Iran issue is unfortunate, but if he had gone and bombed Iran, all those 52 hostages would have been killed. At least they came home after 444 days, as terrible as it was. So I think Carter's already being reassessed while he lives, but once he's passed, he's going to look, I think, not great, not the top 10 or 15, but I think he will move up somewhat in his ranking. And I think Trump being in office helps Carter look better, honestly. And I think, actually, I've gotten an idea for an article to call Trump the anti-Carter, because they're so dramatically different. It sounds like a good article I could come up with soon. I hope I can. Yeah.
So we should consider the many good things that Carter did for foreign policy. I mean, there was one bad thing, but give him credit. And this is so typical of Carter being, a working, everyday working man. The hostages were released the same day that Reagan took office. And this is incredible. I remember watching TV. What am I going to watch? The hostages coming back home, or am I going to watch Reagan? Actually, I think I watched the hostages. But I certainly appreciated we had a new president with, again, I didn't say I loved his policies, but loved the way he spoke. And he had a great sense of humor, and he loves his country. But certainly things were taken in a very, very different direction. And his administration had some tumultuous moments also, to say the least. So certainly,
Iran-Contra scandal is just one involving Iran. I think that's in some ways almost worse than the Iran-Hostage seizure. But it depends on how you look at it,
I mean, January 20th, 1981 was a very busy day in American history, and busy day on the TV. Again, that was before Twitter, Facebook. Again, Zuckerberg wasn't even born yet. I mean, that's, you're talking 1981, for goodness sakes. I had just started college.
Yeah.
And internet, I mean, was around, but not in its current form. People read the newspaper, they listened to the radio, and they watched the old tube.
Three TV stations. Cable was just barely beginning. Yeah.
Things were different, but be assured that was a very busy news day. And I remember it. And it was, you know, it was bittersweet because you kind of felt sorry for Carter. You respected that he worked on that hostage release until his last day in office, and then he had to leave, and then Reagan comes in. You know, again, a different kind of president, but certainly we'll say that Carter and Reagan both loved their country very much, and that's one of the most important things about their job. So,
yeah, I wanted to point out there are clear-cut indications that the Reagan people worked with Iran not to release the hostages while Carter was president. They wanted to take the credit. So, but apparently it could have been that they could have been let go a little earlier. Every evidence is that's the case, that it was behind-the-scenes negotiations to delay.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible thing. But like in 68, certainly Nixon also made pledges to South Vietnam that made them delay negotiations to possibly end the war so that Hubert Humphrey wouldn't be affected. So there's been dirty tricks by Republicans in 68 and 80, in 2000 with the recount in Florida, and then in 2016 again. So I mean, it's a bad record for Republicans playing hardball to win, you know.
Yeah, I guess you never really know, and that's part of the fun of talking about this stuff. It remains a mystery, and there's always a curve being thrown just when you thought you figured it out. So if we were to listen to a, let's say, fast forward, Ron, a couple of years to a Donald Trump reelection commercial, and he were to talk about all these wonderful foreign policy accomplishments, what do you think the commercial would say?
Well, assuming that there is no trouble with North Korea, no war, and that something has been done positively, which so far we do not know, he could, of course, brag about that, and that would be a good thing if they had started to denuclearize. As far as otherwise in foreign affairs, I don't think there's much else at this point. I mean, if he wants to rave about his relationship with Putin, but I don't think that's something to brag about. And as far as his relations with NATO and with Canada, I don't think it's good. I don't know how he's going to make it look good. I mean, I guess something could come up, but honestly, I think his major accomplishment is, at this point, is what he always says, Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. That I definitely think, you know, whether we like the fact that he's on the court or not, that is, and at least he is clean. There's no indication, even now, of any scandal like there is around Brett Kavanaugh. So
that is
an accomplishment, yeah.
Yeah, I guess we can say that we're fans of Gorsuch as a policy maker. But yeah, as a man, he appears to be scandal-free, and it's really kind of ridiculous to think that that's something we should commend somebody for. But in this case, I guess we have to give the man credit.
Yes.
He's scandal-free, but on policy, we're not exactly fans. So take the good with the bad there. So
yes,
before we get to the next topic, which again is more a fun topic, and then we'll, of course, talk about Kavanaugh, and we could probably fill 10 shows with that. So we'll just talk really fast.
I wanted to share with us, Ron, your
blog about the birthday boy, Jimmy Carter. 94 today on 10/1/24. That was 1924. Jimmy Carter was born.
I just did it a couple of hours ago before the show. It says, respect and applause on Jimmy Carter's 94th birthday, a treasure for the nation. Former President Jimmy Carter has reached his 94th birthday today, and that is an event which should engender respect and applause that we have been graced with his long life, only matched by former President George H.W. Bush on June 12th of this year. Jimmy Carter has been out of office nearly 38 years, an all-time record, and his Vice President Walter Mondale is still doing well as he nears 91 in early January. Carter's presidency was controversial due to the Iran hostage crisis, high inflation after the second Arab oil embargo of 1978-79, and the Cuban Mariel boat lift to Miami, Florida. But Carter will always be remembered for the 40-year success of the Camp David Accords, the agreement of Israel and Egypt to establish diplomatic relations, the first such agreement between any Arab nation and the Jewish state. Carter is also remembered for the Panama Canal Treaty, for opening up diplomatic relations with the People's Republic of China, for his promotion of human rights, for his establishment of three new cabinet agencies, education, health, and human services, and energy, and for his great promotion of environmental protection, making him the third most accomplished in that field after Theodore Roosevelt and Richard Nixon, and more recently challenged by Barack Obama. He and his wife, Rosalynn, are on the road to being the longest presidential marriage about a year from now, when they would surpass the length of marriage of George H.W. and his wife, Barbara Bush. By that time, a year from now, the Carters would be 95 and 91 years of age. Let us hope that the Carters and Walter Mondale continue to live on and grace us by their presence. That's my
excellent piece, and again, written and narrated by Dr. Ron L. Fineman, a frequent guest here with me and occasionally with Scott. Speaking with us today on the 94th birthday of President Jimmy Carter and some other events we will now cover. Be sure to visit Dr. Fineman's blog regularly, theprogressiveprofessor.com. Good stuff. You might learn something and tickle a brain cell or two. So, Ron, yesterday on Sunday, the last day of September, you watched the 61st episode of 60 Minutes. And
61st anniversary show opening, yeah.
The final segment involved an interview with a man that we both have high amount of respect for, Sir Paul McCartney, of course, former bass guitarist, singer, songwriter of the Beatles, and he's still around, still doing concerts, and still sounds great. What was
76
your impression?
Years old now.
Yeah, what was your impression of that interview?
I thought it was really great. I was shocked, though, to hear he doesn't know how to read music. I really didn't know that. I don't think anybody ever knew that. He said none of the Beatles knew how to read music. A lot of people sing, but they cannot read music. I just find that quite shocking. I did not expect that. But I also found it interesting that he's willing to shake a hand and talk to you, but he doesn't like selfies, which I guess I can respect. He doesn't like people taking photographs all the time, so he will not do that. So it might alienate some people. But honestly, I think people have gone overboard with selfies. So I actually, you know, I agree with him on it, that shaking hand and talking eyeball to eyeball is much better than worrying about a silly picture.
So Paul McCartney, a legend. You know, a lot of musicians, I mean, reading music per se is easy. It's kind of applying that to notes. But many people just play by ear and play what comes to them, and especially those who are in the rhythm. Again, Paul McCartney, I mean, multi-instrumentalist, but you know, bass guitar is certainly one of his fortes. So bass guitarists, drums, they often kind of just wing it. And, you know, Beatles drummer Ringo Starr, one of the greatest, and also had many great hits as a solo performer, and his son, Zach Starkey, you know, Ringo's real name being Richard Starkey. His son, Zach Starkey, is followed in his father's footsteps by also playing the drums, and he's not bad either. So, yeah, legend in his own time, still around. Yeah, still around. He's made many great duets, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, Say, 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 The Girl Is Mine, and, of course, Ebony and Ivory, one of the all-time classics. Kind of a song you love or you hate, but it will go down that way, I think.
I think he's one of the greatest singers, musicians, entertainers of the 20th and early 21st century. He would certainly be right up there with Elvis and a few others, you know.
Okay, so we've talked about music, talked about Jimmy Carter. What topic remains, Ron? Do you think you know what the next topic is, or do we need to get the amazing Kreskin, who's a regular guest with Scott, to maybe prognosticate about the next topic? Or what do you think the next topic should be?
The next topic is the degradation of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee. How bad a job the majority have done. And yet, because of Jeff Flake of Arizona, who is not coming back, and he admitted tonight on 60 Minutes that if he was coming for another term, he would not have done what he did to decide to call for a week's investigation and delay a vote on Brett Kavanaugh. So that I guess annoyed me a bit that he actually would not, because of your election, would not have done this if you were running. To me, that's terrible. I mean, I'm glad he's done doing what he's doing, but really, you should have some principle, and the job is not the only thing. You're not going to die on the vine or be on the streets if you don't have the job. You should stand for your principles. But apparently he admitted he would not have done it if he was running again. So that's the issue. It's always partisanship and everybody in their own camp and not working across the aisle. And that's our problem.
Yeah, we're in a very divisive time now with President Donald J. Trump in the Oval Office. A lot of stuff online, pro and con, and people, you know, maybe just not really sure about Dr. Christine Blasey Ford and her testimony, and then the Kavanaugh appointment or attempted appointment to Supreme Court, and just people for, people against it. People just seem divided, and I don't know what's going to come of this. Your prediction is that Kavanaugh will not be confirmed, and I would tend to agree, and I would say having him on the Supreme Court is scary. We talked about Gorsuch. Now, we don't agree with Gorsuch's policies, but we do respect him as a man. He is qualified, and he appears to not have any scandals. I mean, seeing is believing, but at this point, he seems to be clean, which seems to become one of the most important qualifiers to be in office or be on the Supreme Court. So at least give the guy credit
the
for that.
Court, you have to be. Yeah, but we have, I think Clarence Thomas has already been on. We don't need a second stained person on the Supreme Court along with Clarence
Thomas. We already talked about Kavanaugh, who's probably worse in terms of policies than Gorsuch. And now all these scandals. The guy, again, can't keep his pants on. He claims to be so happily married and so Christian, but he's a hypocrite, if you want my opinion. And when he was in college, I mean, everybody does things in their youth that they may not be proud of, but Kavanaugh went over the boundary. Plus, Supreme Court justices are held to a higher standard. There's a difference between a Supreme Court justice and someone who might work in a different industry. We expect that person to be clean and to have outstanding ethic and moral character. And it would appear that Kavanaugh is not in that category. In terms of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, your impression, Ron, has obviously been a positive one. What will be her influence on the eventual outcome of this nomination of Kavanaugh?
I would say that I think that Blasey Ford's testimony will kill the nomination. I do not think Lisa Murkowski and also Susan Collins will vote for her. Vote for him, I should say, and possibly not Flake either. I really tend to think unlikely that would happen. And I would also point out there's more evidence now showing up about drinking problems that he really has, that he's had his whole life. I'm talking about regarding Kavanaugh. And there's going to be more evidence coming out this week, and I think he's been besmirched by this whole situation and that he would harm the court's reputation, just like Clarence Thomas has done 27 years with him. And I just don't think we need 2 out of 9 members of the court. One is enough that already have scandals or skeletons in their closets. So I think it's going to fail, but we'll know, I guess, by next show, next week.
So the suspense will increase next week on October 8th. Much more.
Yeah, I wanted to make one more point about this. Ford and also Anita Hill, from the Clarence Thomas hearings, were both educated, professional people, both college professors, very articulate, and still they, in the case of Anita Hill, and now in this case, there's all these people who want to ignore what they say because they're women. But imagine if the woman who was coming up either time was an uneducated person, an ordinary woman who maybe didn't have much education, wasn't articulate, maybe a poor person, maybe a person, of a minority background or a white poor person, and imagine how much harder it would be for such a woman to come up and make an accusation, because that's reality, that although these women are better than most people in their education, there's an awful lot of women out there that are being exploited, who are poor, who are deprived, etc., and they have no voice. So that's why these women really are to be seen as heroines, both of them, Anita Hill and in the case of Blasey Ford, because they're speaking for people who are not able to express themselves like they have.
So we see, I'm not sure if it's Blasey or Blasey, but Dr. Ford, we can call her that. Another Dr. F, because you're a Dr. F also. you see her as having a lot.
Well, I'm Dr. F.
Yeah, a lot of credibility.
I'm joking.
A lot of credibility.
One thing we have to make clear is this woman is not related to Gerald Ford.
Yeah.
Not Henry Ford either.
so her credibility is not a good sign for Brett Kavanaugh, who is not quite as clean and as you want people to think. Let's just put it mildly. And again,
he conducted himself, he was angry, he was partisan, he was attacking the Clintons by name. You can't do that. What if there was a case involving, let's say, the Clintons that came up? He'd have to recuse himself. You don't get, political and partisan when you're going for the court. You just can't. And that, I think he's self-destructed, in my opinion, by his temperamental behavior.
Senator Ben Sasse, who has presidential aspirations, and he is very conservative, but he's also a PhD with an academic background. And You're of the belief that he might not vote for Kavanaugh either, and that also won't be good
news. Well, but he seems to still be planning to, he still wants to vote about his committee. I don't know. I'm disappointed that he hasn't done more. And also Bob Corker, the foreign relations chairman who's leaving. Why isn't he? So I must say I'm really disillusioned that politicians will not do what is right. They will do what only benefits themselves or the party line they're on. And that is not like John F. Kennedy's book, Profiles in Courage. That's not the way to be. You've got to have a profile in courage and do what's unpopular. And if you lose your seat, so what? You're not poor. You're not deprived. You're not going to be on the street homeless. It's not the end of the world if you don't keep your job, but at least you have dignity and respect that people can believe what you really feel rather than playing partisan politics all the time. But I guess that's just unfortunately not the way it is now.
Yeah, I mean, Nikki Haley's done some of the same things, said things and done things we may not agree with, but she does have to follow her boss or otherwise she'll get the axe. And
but one thing about Nikki Haley, she made a point of saying that they were not laughing at him at the UN. They were laughing. And I'm saying, why are you doing this? You're hurting yourself. Because everybody can see but has a brain that the diplomats of the UN were laughing when he was talking about the best presidency. And I don't know why she's doing that. I think she's harming herself by doing that. It's not the right way to be. Just keep quiet. Don't have to say anything, you know.
Yeah.
People know, don't know when to shut up. They talk too much, you know.
We've talked about Sasse and Haley being a possible 2020 Republican presidential ticket. I guess we'll find out if that happens and what influence this Kavanaugh caper has.
It's not going to help them. I don't think if, you know, the way it looks right now, unfortunately, especially Sasse, if he votes for him and he gets in. I think it's a mistake. I think Sasse should have some principle. And look, he's not running until 2020. Now, it might be a problem if he ran, but look, you know, again, he has a life. He can do without this job. He doesn't have to have it forever. I still say he should have principles. But that's what I say, but I'm not the senator. You know?
Well, it's the official opinion of our official WWGH presidentologist, Dr. Ron Fineman. And, you know, normally Dr. Fineman has some pretty fine points, and we'll see if those are correct ones. He is the author of the blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and we again encourage you to read it, bookmark it, stimulate a brain cell or two or three or a few thousand. Last week, he wrote about a positive topic. The 116th Congress will have the most minorities and women in American history. Right now in the 115th Congress, racial and ethnic minorities represent more than 45% of Democrats in the House, women up to a third of Democrats in the chamber, but not so much for Republicans. The Senate has 9 members who are minorities. Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and Tim Scott, I'm not as familiar with him, are Republicans. Of course, we know about Cruz and Marco Rubio.
He's African-American Republican, the only one. Yeah, he's African-American and Republican from South Carolina, yes.
Also known, of course, he's from Florida, where Dr. Fineman is hangs his hat. Also known
Rubio,
as Little
yes.
Marco. But as I say, you see his ears, they aren't little, just he's kind of short, but he's got these big ears. Not quite sure, but that's okay. As long as he also has a big brain, that's good enough for me. The other 6, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Tammy Duckworth, Mazie Hirono. That's a good name. Mazie Hirono.
Yeah, she's interesting. Got to know her better from the Judiciary Committee hearing. She's a tough lady. Yes.
Bob Menendez, Catherine Cortez Masto are Democrats. So obviously, we'd like to think that Congress will represent the ethnic diversity and makeup
and gender
and even age also, because there's also a lot of talk that the Congress people are getting too old. We need some young.
Well,
young
they
blood.
Are. There's now 5 people over 80 who are in the Senate, and that's not, I think, a good thing. One of them, of course, will definitely win. Dianne Feinstein, who's the oldest, she's 85. And I'm thinking, if she's there, and she's pretty good generally, and she looks good, but if she's still there at 91, she'll only be the 4th. Senator ever to reach 90 in office. The only others being Robert Byrd, Strom Thurmond, and Carl Hayden. And I just feel, yes, it's nice that older people work, but really, at that stage, I think we need change. We should not have people in their 80s like Chuck Grassley, Orrin Hatch. I just think it's time to say, Orrin Hatch is leaving, but I just think it's too much. I mean, I think there needs to be some kind of, you can't legislate it, but I think by age 80, it's time to say, give somebody else a chance. But in California, she will be there as long as she stays healthy.
So we like the idea that we're getting a more diverse Congress. And again, it should reflect the country as a whole. So that's a positive point. But again, in our divisive time, we're in 2018. All I can say is that we shall see, because you really never know. Now, we talked about this last show, but it's still important that the Midwest battleground is where the modern political system began. You wrote in your blog yesterday. Mm-hmm. And has been a crucial factor in elections ever since the Republican Party was created in Michigan and Wisconsin 164 years ago in 1854. Lincoln, of course, from Illinois, he was born in a log cabin in Kentucky, so he was born in two states that are near Ohio. Of course, many presidents from Ohio, including Warren G. Harding, McKinley, Garfield, Hayes, Grant, Taft, Benjamin Harrison from Indiana, and of course, Gerald R. Ford, real name Leslie King, from Michigan.
Yeah.
Again, a former football star with Ohio State's biggest rival, University of Michigan, inheriting the presidency when Agnew resigned, and then Richard Nixon decided to take his talents elsewhere. So we want
good way
we
to
don't want to feel like we're beating a dead horse here, Ron, but we do want to stress the Midwest is an important battleground, and if anything, that's actually increasing. And
yes, it is, and I think that the problem is the Democrats have too many people from the coastlines. That's why I'm starting to boost the idea of Amy Klobuchar in Minnesota as a possible, because she's a woman. And what I point out about her is that people don't like, unfortunately or fortunately, depending how you look at it, they don't like a woman who's too shrill or too loud, as they see it. Men can get away with it, but women can't. And unfortunately, Kirsten Gillibrand and Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris all tend to be much more vehement, and I think probably turn off many men. Well, I think Amy Klobuchar has shown this week in her handling of Kavanaugh, and just generally, I think she comes across very well, and they're all from the coastlines, either East or West Coast, and she's from Minnesota, the Hubert Humphrey, Walter Mondale, Eugene McCarthy, Paul Wellstone tradition. So I really think she's somebody to really pay attention to for president, Amy Klobuchar.
So you're mentioning Klobuchar is more laid back than the women we might think of as being presidential contenders, and Hillary included. Less confrontational, just more mellow.
Not as confrontational. Yeah, more mellow. That's the word. But, of course, some people might not like it because she's mellow. They might say, we need a real fighter like Elizabeth Warren, who's planning to run. But Elizabeth Warren is loud. Not that I'm against her. I like her. But, I mean, compared to a Chris Christie or Newt Gingrich or somebody like Donald Trump, they can get away with it. Women cannot as easily get away with it, I don't think, in the minds of many men, at least. You know, and that's the problem.
I think her mellow persona, she'd be considered weak, or just that she's more the strong, silent type? How would a lot of people take that?
We'll have to see when she's involved in debates, because I'm pretty sure she's going to announce as a candidate for president. By the way, once November 6th occurs and once we know the results, by the end of the year and early next year, we're going to have 500 people probably announcing for president. Everybody you can imagine is along that 500. I'm joking. But probably there could be a tremendous number, more than 20. And there's at least 55 people rumored. So I'm sure we're going to get at least 20 people originally to announce for the Democrats, probably some for the Republicans. And it's going to be a crazy political season as, of course, people are winnowed out. You know, obviously many will fall by the wayside. But I think she has a good chance to be one of the few finalists, at least, I hope, because I think she's really very, very substantive, and I really admire her a lot, Amy Klobuchar.
So if you, the listener, thought that the primaries were crowded in 2016, you ain't seen nothing yet. 2020 will really be.
Well, there were 17 Republicans, but I think we're going to get more than 17 Democrats announcing. They won't all go far, but there'll be more than 17, I think, announcing. That's the problem, and it gets confusing, and it makes it very hard for anybody to come out on top.
Not surprisingly, we only have a few minutes left of today's program. So before we say goodbye on this first day of October 2018, more than three quarters of 2018 has passed. Nice, fast-moving year, but got a lot done here at the station. All kinds of interesting news headlines, and another day. Another day to talk politics and other interesting events. Bottom line is, Ron, I know you put this on Facebook a few times, and we alluded to it earlier. What is going to happen to Kavanaugh? Is he not going to become Supreme Court Justice? And if so, whom will be nominated, or will he make it through these hearings? What do you think is going to happen? Can you get out your crystal ball and share that with our listeners?
I think he will not make it through, but I could be wrong. But I think if not, the most likely choice is this woman, Amy Coney Barrett, that was on the short list. And, of course, being a woman would probably help. And I'm assuming she has no scandal. I mean, we don't know. But she's also quite a bit younger, so that would be a good thing from the viewpoint of the Republicans. A younger candidate would live longer and have more years on the court. He's 53. I think she's only in her mid-40s. So it would be, you know, different in that respect, but I would tend to think he's not going to make it. But may I just add in, if I have a moment, that I published an article yesterday in History News Network about retreads, people who have run for president and lost, and I went through the fact that 14 presidents have been retreads, meaning they lost and then they became president, and now we have 14 potential candidates, 7 Democrats, 7 Republicans, rumored to be running, who all have run and not become president, but could very well. So we have 14 past, and we now have 14 present people competing, maybe for one of them to be number 15, you know, to be losing and then winning the White House.
So an interesting few days awaits. Do you think that, how is a likely, I mean, I would say it is likely, rejection of Kavanaugh's nomination, how would that affect his future career? I mean, the guy's in his early 50s, he's a relatively young man. Is that really going to scar him for life, or can he just get on with his business?
I mean, he's still on the circuit court in D.C., but of course there could be an investigation of his lying before congressional committees. He could possibly face impeachment, although I don't think he'd be removed. We've only had one such case, Samuel Chase in 1805 during Jefferson's administration, and he was impeached but found not guilty because he needed a two-thirds vote. So I think there could be tumult for him, but I would think it's likely he will stay on the circuit court for the, you know, and that's not a bad job. It only pays $50,000 less. I think now he might wish he had never agreed to run for the court and stay on the circuit court because he was non-controversial on there because we didn't know all this stuff about him. So I would think he'll probably remain on the circuit court but probably face an impeachment inquiry, but still would survive it and stay on the court.
So you don't see any really adverse effects from a rejection of...
His reputation.
Yeah.
Reputation will be hurt. But
Embarrassment. I mean, to me, it's very embarrassing. But, you know, the guy dug his own grave. But we'll see if...
And I do think I would not be surprised that we'll discover one day he gets stopped for drunk driving or something. I just have a feeling a person that has a liquor problem back then, and I'm sure still does, or beer problem, whatever, is bound to have an issue where something will come up and it will be a story in the news. Just like Sarah Palin's son, again, for domestic abuse, third year in a row now, he's been arrested. So once you have these problems, they don't go away, and Sarah Palin's family has been harmed by their son and his misbehavior. And these things just don't disappear. They show up eventually.
So if I giggle a bit after we think will be a rejection of Kavanaugh's Supreme Court possibility, and then he gets into some trouble with the law, feel free to giggle a couple times. And again, he's the one to blame for this. Obviously, he's not quite the Mr. Clean that he wants us to think. I mean, he's a smart man.
I wanted to mention one more thing about Sarah Palin. She's talking about leaving Alaska and moving to Arizona or New Mexico, I see, which I thought, I don't think those states would be so happy she's coming, but she is planning to leave Alaska with her husband now because the kids are all grown up. She wants to leave Alaska, she said, this weekend.
Going from the cold climate to the hot climate, but that's okay.
So,
we'll find out. I really think that what happens to Kavanaugh after this, we're thinking, unsuccessful nomination to the Supreme Court might be interesting, and we'll keep the National Enquirer and gossip shows very busy. I think we'll just...
Well, also, I got to finally point out that even if he's on the court, he could have a drunk driving arrest or something. It doesn't mean you couldn't happen when you're on the Supreme Court or if he's on the circuit court. So I think there's going to be a problem in the future. I hope not, for his sake, but I have a feeling that there's a problem there with drinking from what other people have said who were with him.
We shall see. Unfortunately, Ron, the clock has ticked. We thank you very much for being with us again. A wonderful show.
Thanks so much.
And laughed a little bit and talked about some history and some predictions and remembered the difficult and controversial presidency of Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, again, many years after leaving the Oval Office, still very visible and still doing great things for the country that he loves. And we wish him many more years.
I hope he lives to 100.
Wish Jimmy
I
Carter
hope he lives to 100. Wouldn't it be great if he reached 100? Wow.
Wishing him many more years of a great life. He really is an American hero. Thanks, Dr. Ron Feinman, for being on the air with us. Have a great rest of your Monday.
Thank you so much.
An extreme honor, as always, to have the official WWGH presidentologist, Dr. Ron Feinman, to discuss current events, past presidential politics, mumblings, rumblings, jumblings, and tumblings over at Donald's Place on Pennsylvania Avenue. And, of course, like any show on the station, always a surprise or two. And like any show featuring yours truly, at least one wisecrack every 7 minutes. Hope you enjoyed it. Really enjoyed those retro commercials for President Carter. I thank the intern for coordinating that. Great job, as always. 5 stars, at least. Coming up after the noon hour, it is now with Scott Spears, and his guest will be Ted Strickland, former governor of the great state of Ohio. Don't miss it. Great programming all day long on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.